Hey, this is Robert Gibson of the Rock and Roll Express. When I'm around, I listen to the Double Dropkick Show.
Check, check.
Test, test, test. Sipowitz.
Sipowitz.
Okay. Hey, welcome to the dark. Welcome to the dark side.
To the dark side. Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games.
We got everything you want.
Okay.
We should leave that in.
Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show from Parts Unknown. I'm Heath Mulliken.
And I'm Mark Whitman. And I don't know who the Midnight Rider is.
We are the only wrestling podcast that talks about the wrestling you grew up with, some of the most underrated workers in wrestling history, or at least this era that Mark and I have kind of grew up with from late 70s to today. And there's some guys who did not make either one of our list, and we just want to take a minute and Mark, tell the people why they're not going to hear some names on this list.
Every time I hear so-called experts, so-called fans talking about underrated performers, I always hear the same three names: Curt Hennig, Rick Rude, and Ted DiBiase. They seem to be on everybody's list. So first of all, right there, if you're on everybody's list of underrated, well, what's underrated about you?
Yeah.
If everybody's saying you're underrated, then you're rated. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That means everybody thinks you're great. And I think that comes from the fact that those guys were never WWF champion.
Right.
But there's some important things that you need to realize about why they weren't champion. First of all, they drew the unlucky card of being in the World Wrestling Federation in their prime while Hulk Hogan was there.
Yes.
Okay. Hulk Hogan was the flagship of that company. DiBiase and Hennig both had programs with Hulk Hogan, but they didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Hennig fought him on Saturday night's main event, did some main events at Madison Square Garden. But here's what you need to know about Rude and Hennig. Are you familiar with Lloyds of London, Heath?
I am familiar
with
the
insurance company. For those that aren't, they insure things that are probably not going to happen for large amounts of money. For instance, I think Julia Roberts has her smile, but it's kind of her trademark. Mm-hmm. She has it insured.
Yeah.
So if something was to happen and she's out at her kid's softball game and she gets hits in the mouth and all her teeth come out, okay, Julia Roberts can then make her claim with Lloyd. Jennifer Lopez has her rear end because it's one of her trademarks.
Right.
And if something were to happen and half her butt gets cut off, she can claim.
That's a show for another day.
Yeah. So both Rude, and not just them, a lot of guys had this. Big Boss Man had one of these.
Nikita
Koloff. Bret Hart had one that he cashed in when Goldberg kicked him in the head and ended his career. And Vince paid it off so that he could come back and do that angle with Vince a few years ago. A lot of people don't know that. Anyway, Hennig and Rude both had policies with Lloyd's of London, both got hurt, and both cashed those policies in, so they were not able legally to wrestle anymore, because if they did, it would have been insurance fraud.
Yeah.
Now, eventually, there was a stipulation they couldn't wrestle for so many years. Those went away. Rude was training for a comeback when he died.
Yeah.
Hennig had already come back. Had that not happened to Hennig, if you think back on the incredible matches he had with Bret Hart, they were the guys who were coming up. Hart, Michaels, and Hennig were coming up and being positioned as the next guys to take over, but Hennig got hurt. Wow. So he wasn't able to get in that and capitalize. So that's why he's not on that list, okay? Because he would have been a champion.
Yeah.
Rude was a champion in WCW.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't the world champion in WWF, mainly because Hulk Hogan didn't want to work with him. Hulk Hogan's exact... Rude, if you don't know this, was a legitimate tough guy with a real mean streak.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Warrior did something he didn't like in a match one time, and he took him backstage and boxed his ears. He slapped him on both sides of the head and almost knocked him unconscious.
Yeah.
Tough guy, strong guy.
Yeah.
And Hogan's exact comment was when they asked him why he never had a program with Rude, he said, why would I want to go in the ring with the Tasmanian Devil?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's what he felt like. Hogan had a list of guys that he was afraid of and wouldn't work with.
Yeah.
Because he knew that he couldn't just do anything he wanted to. And Rick Rude was one of those guys.
And that's why, and we talked about it on the matches you need to see you haven't seen, where Hogan worked with some guys, had the non-formulaic match. But once he got into the character in WWF, he had a list of guys. Earthquake, King Kong Bundy, Brutus Beefcake, certain people, a certain style, people that fit his formula and
that he could make money with, and Rude didn't.
And he could have made money with Rick Rude. My goodness.
I don't understand why. I get that he didn't want to because he wanted to protect his character. And as far as DiBiase, a lot of people don't know this, that the original plan was for when they had the tournament at WrestleMania 4 was for DiBiase to win the title.
Yeah.
And Pat Patterson came to DiBiase, and I've heard Ted DiBiase, I'm not talking what I think. Ted DiBiase tells it this way, that they came to him and said, look, here's the deal. We can give you the title, and you can hold it for a while, and then you'll do a program with Hogan, and at the next WrestleMania, Hogan's going to take it away from you.
Yeah.
Or you can lose, and then you can come out with your own belt with all the diamonds and the gold on it, and you can carry that for years.
Yeah.
And you can be the $1 million champion that you got so much money, you just created your own championship. And he saw that for what it was, a license to print money.
Yeah,
and, exactly. And he made a lot of money carrying that belt around. So he almost, I don't want to say he refused the title.
Yeah.
But they changed that plan because they knew that he could get a lot more mileage out of the $1 million man character. So those three guys, they just don't belong on that list as far as I'm concerned. Right. Your opinions about them.
I totally agree. They're three of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I think DiBiase stuff from Mid-South, classic.
Oh, man.
Hennings vignettes coming in as Mr. Perfect.
And I'm sure you've heard the story that most of those were shot in one take.
Yeah.
Like there was no, that's why he was so perfect at what he did. Like he was so athletic that he was that good.
If you had told me, I remember Mark and I, we grew up outside of the AWA. I didn't watch AWA. Couldn't watch AWA.
I saw it every now and then on ESPN.
But they came out finally with some AWA All-Star Wrestling videos. And I got the one with the Road Warriors. And Kurt Hennig is heavily featured on that, where they Road Warriors give him a beatdown. And Kurt Hennig comes back with his dad to wrestle the Road Warriors. And I'll be honest, watching that, if you'd have told me, hey, this guy's a future Hall of Famer, I'd be like, I really don't see it.
Right.
But he developed into that. And
Cool Kurt Hennig was his name.
The Mr. Perfect character, I totally agree. Rick Rude, oh my goodness. I remember him from World Class Wrestling. His first manager was Percy Pringle, you know, Paul Bearer, who's going in the Hall of Fame. And I mean, Rick Rude. He's not in the Hall of Fame, is he?
No, I don't think
definitely
so.
Deserves it.
Should be.
Had some of the great. You talk about a guy you just hated.
Wasn't he like the first guy, I think, that really took Ultimate Warrior to the limit? And he beat Warrior.
Yeah.
And that was had not been done up to that point where somebody challenged a Warrior like that.
He had some really good programs. And
Sting.
And he great wrestled matches with Sting. With Steamboat. So
Steamboat.
A lot of good. But if 100 people say. If 100% of the people agree that you're underrated,
you're not underrated.
You're not underrated.
You're not underrated. I don't. So you're not going to hear those names, but we felt that we needed to discuss those three so you would understand why we don't believe they deserve to be. And we agreed on that after we talked about it, that they don't deserve to be on that list. And that's why they don't deserve, or don't, not deserve. They don't, there's no reason to put them on that list because they're not underrated.
I'll go ahead and tell you. This is might be the first time our lists do not overlap today.
No,
you have your list and I have my list. So let's start off. Mark, I'll let you go first. Who's the first name on your underrated list you want to share?
Well, it's interesting that we talk about Mr. Perfect, though, because I'm going to tell you about another guy who came into the WWF about the same time.
Yeah.
And they had Kurt Hennig and Terry Taylor both came in about the same time. They also had two gimmicks.
Yeah.
Oh. Mr. Perfect and the Red Rooster. And they didn't know for a while Terry Taylor was going to be Mr. Perfect. They had not made their mind up about who was going to be who yet.
Yeah.
One of them was going to be the Red Rooster. One of them was going to be Mr. Perfect. And just as history and luck would have it, they knew that Henning would fit the Mr. Perfect thing. I've heard people say that they think that the Red Rooster was a joke or a rib or to make fun of, and I don't believe that. I think that they just generally try anything. Yeah. And it was just, I think the idea of it was just maybe, you know, to cock at a walk, and he's, you know, he struts around like a rooster. So the idea of it, I get, but in the execution, it was just awful. And somebody should have said, wait a minute.
Now,
he's got a red stripe painted down the middle of his head. And it's awful.
Killed his career.
It did. It killed his career. But, man, he had some incredible matches in the UWF with Flair when he wrestled for the title with Flair. And you can get that on the Mid-South DVD by following the link on our website.
Yep.
And he tells a great story on there about Flair that you need to hear.
Yeah. But here's another thing. Terry Taylor, at that point in time in WWF, they couldn't just bring a guy as a wrestler.
No, like you had guy, to have.
Because that's what Terry Taylor was, a worker.
Right.
He could cut a decent promo. I loved his stuff. The York Foundation. Yeah. He was Terrence Taylor. That was a good. I mean, that was a takeoff of the Million Dollar Man.
Right.
But he could work with anybody.
Yeah. I have talked to some guys who have been in the ring with Terry Taylor and said, you can't fathom how good he is.
Yeah.
And just everything he does, he doesn't miss a beat. He's smooth. And he just doesn't hold that place in wrestling history that I think he deserves, because I think he was just a phenomenal hand in the ring.
Because he never even held – he was a TV champion, but he was never Intercontinental champion. I don't think so.
He never held any major titles.
Yeah. Maybe some tag team runs here or there. That is one I absolutely agree with you. Terry Taylor's. Now, here's the first name I'm going to throw out there. And this would be, if you had to list 100 names that you thought I was going to throw out as underrated.
Yeah, I would. I'm shocked at some of the names on your list.
I'm throwing out Ivan Koloff. Ivan Koloff, when I first started wrestling, he was the big villain.
Yeah.
Because we talked about in our very first episode what got us into wrestling. It was the Rock and Roll Express against the Russians, and there's Ivan Koloff.
Right.
Ivan Koloff, Bruno Sammartino was the champion for 8 years. And when it came time for him to lose the title, he lost the title to Ivan Koloff. Now, he defended that title against hundreds of guys.
Yeah.
He had to lose it to somebody. Even though it was probably the most shocking moment in Madison Square Garden history, he had to lose it to somebody that was believable. And it was believable because Ivan Koloff could hang with Bruno Sammartino. It was believable.
Right.
So that's back in the 70s. You get into the 80s, Ivan Koloff is working. To me, I put him in the underrated category because I think he's not, as far as a character, he's not underrated. But just the fact that he was able to work so many different people. He didn't work a lot of different styles, but he could have a decent match with Wahoo McDaniel or Dusty Rhodes or Sting or any of those guys, the Road Warriors. When really
– Rock and Roll Express.
Rock and Roll Express. I mean, because I don't know. He could make and when you talk about the matches with the Russians – and in a lot of his tag team matches, Ivan Koloff took the pin.
Yeah.
You know?
To protect Nikita.
Right.
Well, he was at the end of his career. It was time for him to do that.
And but I just feel that when people talk about the greats.
You're right. You never hear his name.
You don't hear his name. And he had a very long career. He held a lot of different titles.
You convinced me.
And again...
You never hear the WWF, the WWE acknowledge that Ivan Koloff was. You just don't hear that a whole lot.
No, and I think I would have a different opinion if he were in the Hall of Fame or if you heard his name mentioned anywhere.
I thought he was in the Hall of Fame.
No,
is he not?
No,
really?
Because there's actually a Facebook group. But matter of fact, one of the Facebook groups we're in where the soup Nazi is the administrator, said, don't come on here and say Ivan Koloff. We don't try to get votes for him for the Hall of Fame. We're going to – so, but – so anyway, I just want to throw that out there. Again, he's not going to have he could have a five-star match with somebody. But it's not going to be because of his work rate or anything like that. It's going to be because of there was something about Ivan Koloff. You just thought he was just monster or whatever.
Right.
Even though he was looked like an old man, there was still I don't know. I can't.
Weird. He looks younger today than he did back in 87.
He does.
You know?
I can't explain that.
Yeah,
and
he
probably
is
wrestling this weekend somewhere.
I think he's got – it seems like – because I knew – some guys who knew Ivan.
Yeah.
And I think he had surgery done on both of his ankles. And
gotcha.
I think they're fused. I don't know that he can even move his feet a whole lot.
Oh, wow.
I think his ankles have been fused together.
Well, what do you think about Ivan Koloff?
No, I agree. I had not thought about him as being underrated. I really hadn't. But when you talk about that, like the fact that he was a WWF.
Yeah, yeah.
Champion, and he's forgotten when they list their lineage and talk about their champions. But he beat Bruno Sammartino. That's a big deal, man.
Yeah,
that's a big deal to have beaten Bruno.
All right, who's next on your list?
Barry Windham.
Yeah.
Barry Windham. We talk about Barry all the time. I don't know that there's a whole lot more I can say about him. I think the thing about Barry is, and we've discussed it, he had his dad's DNA.
Yeah,
and his father, as he got older, got heavier. And Barry, as he got older, he got heavier and he got slower. But he had that window there for a few years where he was just, if you wanted a good match, you put Barry Windham in it.
Yeah.
Whether it was a tag team match or a match for the U.S. title. I watched him in Zbyszko the other day, and Zbyszko would make my overrated list. And I don't know how many people actually list Zbyszko. I don't think there's any diehard Larry Zbyszko fans out there.
Yeah.
But, you know.
here's the thing with Barry Windham. He had to wrestle Lex Luger a lot. And got to meet Lex Luger a couple years ago. And it's sad to see just the physical issues he's had over these last few years. I mean, he's at a better place in life emotionally and spiritually, but not, you know, not physically at all. But Barry Windham made Lex Luger look like,
like $1 million.
Yeah.
And he made everybody he got in the ring with look like $1 million.
Yeah. I don't know that he ever had a bad match.
No, not in those early days.
Pre-Widowmaker.
Yeah, pre-Widowmaker. Maybe even then he was good, but when he teamed up with Bradshaw, the new Blackjack's Eye, fan of that.
So this goes back to something we talked about with Terry Taylor. Even with Barry Windham, they couldn't just bring in Barry Windham.
Right.
They had to make a character.
Him somebody.
And I don't think they're doing that as much. I don't think they feel like we got to make a character out of you. They're letting guys.
Yeah, but they give them these ridiculous names.
Oh, yeah.
Mason Ryan, we talked about that.
Husky Harris.
I do wonder if Mason Ryan had been brought in, you know, with a different name, maybe he would have gotten over. Like you said, Husky Harris.
Michael McGillicuddy.
Why not just call the guy Joe Henning?
Yeah. And don't pretend like he's not Mr. Perfect's son.
Right. Even though he looks like Larry the Axe.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? He doesn't look at all like Kurt Hennig. He looks like Larry Hennig.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get that they want to own the names.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately that's what it's about. We want to own the name. But I don't understand that giving everybody a character.
And you might be listening to this thinking, well, Barry Windham's not underrated. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame as part of a group.
Yeah, he's in.
Personally, I think he deserves to be in there on his own
accord. Yeah, I do too. Because I've heard somebody else say this, and I don't know who it was. That Four Horsemen thing was about getting Arn in the Hall of Fame.
Right. And I would say,
I don't know that Arn's underrated because Arn knew he was not a world champion.
Right.
You know what I mean? And Arn's one of those guys that had a lot of success, made a lot of money, had a lot of great matches, but he understood not everybody's going to be the world champion. And, you know, by that association with Ric Flair, he made a lot of money.
Yeah.
He got it.
He got
everybody doesn't get to be the world champion.
He had you know, a heck of a career.
Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, exactly.
Hall of Fame career. One of the greatest of all time. One of the greatest promo guys ever.
Yeah.
But not underrated.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Let me throw this name out here. Now, I'm talking about Scott Steiner. Not Big Papa Pump. I'm talking when he first came in, I believe he broke in with Continental Wrestling. I remember, I think he won Rookie of the Year, but I just remember seeing his name and they were like, oh, this is Rick Steiner's brother. Mm-hmm. When he first came in, no one had done it's called a Frankensteiner.
Right.
Because Scott Steiner did it first.
Yeah.
That here's this guy.
There was another guy, the Huracan. Yeah. I don't know his name. Have you read? I read an article about this just the other day. He did that move,
mm-hmm.
but the difference is that Steiner, that was a lucha move where the guy would jump up and flip back and then launch his opponent, and his opponent would cut a flip. With Steiner, it was a jump up and he cuts a backflip and flips them over and drives their head into the mat.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's two different moves. A Hurricane Rana and a Frankensteiner are two different moves.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
But the way he was able to move in the ring, like his brother, great amateur background. I think about some of the I might even lump Rick into this. I mean, they had some great matches. Yeah,
they're one of Road my favorite Warriors, tag teams of
Sting
all time.
Sting and Lex Luger.
That match against Sting and Luger is
it's in Japan,
it's,
right?
No, it's on the network. You can watch it.
Okay,
it's from Super Brawl.
Oh yeah. My bad.
Still, I mean, I watched it about a week ago, just because it is. If I had to list a top 10, I think it would be in my top 10 matches, favorite of all
now,
time.
I don't think he went psycho. Yeah. Not a great promo.
No.
But I think those early days.
But I think his promos were good. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there.
Some of them were okay.
That loose cannon when he was playing that kind of, you didn't know what he was going to say. Yeah. He would just do. So I can't, even though it was kind of rambling and it was gibberish, they were still intriguing to watch because you didn't know what Scott Steiner was going to say.
But before he really, when he became Big Papa Pump, his style completely changed. He became so muscular.
Yeah, he became immobile.
Right. But before that, I really enjoyed his matches. I really enjoyed his style. But a lot of people, because of what happened later in his career and the shooting on Flair at Nitro, that kind of stuff overshadows the fact when he started, the guy could work.
Good. He was in line to be a world heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that good. I absolutely agree with you having him on your.
He was in line to be a world champion before WCW went in the tank. I mean, he became a world champion later on, but he's wrestling Sid Vicious and Jeff Jarrett and Road Warrior Animal, for goodness sake.
Right. I don't know why he didn't get a run. I think maybe Flair just didn't want to drop it to him. That's all I can figure.
Yeah. Well, really, he didn't really do singles before the Big Pop.
Maybe that's what it was,
And,
but he was great. I absolutely agree with you.
I didn't see much of his run when he was in WWF, and I guess he had Keebler.
It was awful.
Yeah.
It was
and him
awful.
And Triple, I mean, he didn't he have the match with Triple H, and Triple H had the, like, what was
the,
he?
The see-through shirt or something
or
like that.
Or some kind of pants or something. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was. But that's, there again, with Triple H sometimes, when he's wrestling a guy he doesn't want to be there with, he doesn't always bring it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's
that would be my criticism of him.
That's true. All right, next on your list, Mark, a name most people will have heard, but not on a list like this.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you why he's on my list. I remember as I got into tape trading, as I got into, not the internet, but like I subscribed to some dirt sheets, and I started hearing about this promotion up in Philadelphia, ECW. I said, man, you got to check it out. And I would read about guys like Sabu. And Chris Benoit was coming in up there, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero. But there was one guy, two guys really, and one was Scott Levy, who was Raven, who had been Johnny Polo. And,
dear.
Scotty the Body and Scotty Flamingo. And I had heard he was doing this really dark character up there, Raven. And that intrigued me. But the other guy that I want to talk about was that Shane Douglas was up there, and he was the number one heel.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, how is Shane Douglas the number one heel anywhere.
Yeah.
Because all I could remember was the Dynamic Dudes and then his team with Ricky Steamboat.
And the was this before the Dean or after the Dean? Dean Douglas.
This should have been see, that's kind of – he went to WWF, and then he went to ECW, then back
yeah.
to WWF, and then back to ECW.
Yeah.
I think it was after
– the Dean.
Or it was in between the Dean. Because, see, he went to WWF, and his dad got sick.
Oh.
And he went home yeah. to take care of his dad for a few years, and then he kind of went to ECW and was getting hot. Then he went to WWF, and then he went back to ECW, and that's when he really caught fire.
Yeah. When, I remember when he, and there's probably a medical explanation for this that you can tell us, but he used to be a pretty skinny guy, even when right. when ECW first started.
Oh, yeah, there's a medical reason
he won,
that.
He won the NWA belt, throws it in the trash, got, yeah. cuts a great just promo. But then later on, he looked like he got stung by a bee.
Yeah, he swole up.
Yeah,
yeah, he's swole
up. There you go.
Yeah, that's the medical term. Yeah, for
the
that.
Medical term.
When
is
you stick a needle
up.
In your butt, that's yeah. called swole.
Now you and I swole up because
yeah,
of
a little
star,
Debbie.
Little yeah. Debbie. Yeah,
yeah, little Debbie and Mountain Dew swole me up. But but I heard, and all I could think about was the Dynamic Dudes with Johnny Ace,
right.
and then the team with Ricky Steamboat, and I thought, how in the world could the most you know, white meat baby face that I can think of that come yeah. along. And he was good in the ring.
Yeah.
But I never was a big fan of his. And then right. I started getting those ECW tapes.
And,
I started watching him yeah. cut those promos.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, man, why did nobody ever think to let him do this?
Yeah. yeah.
And he was just, he is phenomenal. And he went too far sometimes. Yeah. And it became, I know Ric Flair like legitimately has a lot of hatred for him.
Right.
And he went too far sometimes with some of the stuff he said, and he alienated himself from a lot of guys in the business.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like him
yeah.
in the business now. But he was a phenomenal heel.
Yeah.
And then I watched the other night on the network, he switched to babyface on ECW.
Really?
The Philly crowd loved him, and yeah.
So who was yeah. so what was that a pay, what pay per view was that?
Let's see, it was Hardcore Heaven.
Do you know who he was working with?
Bam Bam Bigelow.
Okay. That
was Hardcore Heaven or Living Dangerous.
Because they had been in the Triple Threat together, right?
Right. And then they wind up wrestling against each other, and
yeah.
they were in Philadelphia, and Bam Bam was the heel.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, Bam Bam was the baby face, but they were in Philly and everybody loved Shane.
Yeah.
So they were cheering him, and then Bam Bam beat him down with a crutch at the end, and it kind of introduced a little bit of a baby face thing for him for a while there. I think that was when it was. I don't know, because I haven't watched that stuff in 10 yeah. years.
You talk about the fact that I think I agree with you, because I think without him leading the way and pushing the envelope,
yeah,
crossing some lines, ECW doesn't last as long as it did.
No, because that whole throwing the title down, that was a big deal. Nobody knew that was going to. And just for people that don't know what I'm talking about here, they had a match,
a tournament,
yeah. and he won the National Wrestling Alliance heavyweight title.
Yeah.
The one that actually carries the lineage of Flair
yeah.
and the Funks and the Briscoes.
The belt that you remember before the big gold belt,
right.
the belt that. If I had the money, the belt I would buy
right,
and wear
right.
every day.
I would have one. But that belt, with the lineage of the National Wrestling Alliance, he won that belt in a tournament, and then he threw it down, and he said, no, I don't want this belt.
Yeah.
I'm the new ECW, which had been Eastern Championship Wrestling,
yeah.
and they were the ones conducting the tournament. And he renamed it Extreme Championship Wrestling, and he declared himself the ECW World Heavyweight Champion, because now he had been the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion.
Right.
So he declared himself the ECW World's Heavyweight Champion, and they were off and running, man.
Yeah.
And it made a lot of people mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, legitimately, and I'm not talking about, like, fans mad. It
yeah.
made the guys who still – the National Wrestling Alliance hasn't gone away. It's still around. They
yeah.
still have a belt that still gets defended.
Because in – I want to say 2000, the group in WCW, Perry Saturn, Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Shane Douglas, they're a foursome
yeah.
in WCW. From one night to the next, they all leave the company except Shane Douglas
Yeah.
Could not get back.
Yeah, they didn't want Shane Douglas.
Could not. They said, the three of you, we want. And those other three guys didn't have enough ties with Douglas. So they went.
Right.
And with the exception of Saturn, had good runs in WWE. But ever since then, Shane Douglas has really been in limbo. And
yeah,
really, that was kind of the end.
And he's toned it down. I watched an interview he did with somebody the other a couple of months ago, just out of interest because I saw it pop up on YouTube. Completely different character. And I mean, he was a lot more toned down. And it was, you know, he wasn't running down anybody. He doesn't have access to his career.
Right.
You know, if you think about it.
You hear wrestlers say you can make friends or make money. And Shane Douglas really didn't either.
That's a good point.
But during that ECW run, people forget he was tag team champs with Ricky Steamboat. That's not a slouch. No slouch there. But during my only beef with him in ECW, he had great matches with all shapes and sizes, all styles. He could go scientific with you. He could brawl with you. Mm-hmm. My only beef with him, it just seemed like every time he was injury prone.
Yeah.
He had a lot of injuries. He was always wearing a sling on his arm.
Yeah.
Something was always wrong. That would be my only beef.
I don't know. I don't know that the guy ever did steroids. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I can speculate. I'm not saying he did.
Yeah.
But I do know
his body composition changed.
That his body style changed, and that a side effect of that when you're doing high impact sports is a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
A lot of muscle tears, a lot of things. I know, there again, I don't know. I mean, he may not have. He may have just been hitting the gym real hard.
Right.
But I do know that one of the side effects of doing steroids is a lot of muscle tears and a lot of injuries.
And being angry, and he had a lot of angry promos. Yeah,
he did have a lot of anger.
Next person on my list is someone who, when he first came in to, I think it was WCW, really wasn't a big fan. I didn't get him. And I think in America, he's been misused, and that's Fit Finlay. Amongst wrestlers, if you listen to wrestling podcasts, if you listen to a lot of the Divas, they put this guy through the roof. But I'm saying amongst fans, we don't appreciate it because maybe a guy didn't have a good character. But I think as far as a worker, and do you think you've done it? I mean, you've been a wrestler. Do you think there are some guys who are better trainers than actual workers?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like one of the guys on my list.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing here is, and that may be the thing with Finlay. I just feel like if he'd have been put in the right programs to work a certain I mean, can you imagine a Fit Finlay Daniel Bryan match?
Right. If you ever saw Finlay and Regal,
some of their matches.
You know, the thing about Finlay, man, is he had some real tough, hard-hitting matches, and there's not a lot of guys that like to work that style anymore.
That's very European. You know, he and Regal.
Right, so they worked well together. They hit each other really hard, fast-paced.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of guys in America just they can't adapt to that style.
Yeah.
And I think you and I have talked about this. You have some guys that have zero charisma.
Yeah.
But they have a style like Lance Storm.
Yeah.
They're so good in the ring that they can overcome that. And then you have some guys they're not very good in the ring, but their charisma's through the roof. So they can overcome that. And then you kind of have those middle of the road guys. And I think he's one of those.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a whole lot of charisma. He's really good in the ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So you just kind of, when you're like that, you become middle of the ring. That's where people see you at as a middle of the road guy.
Yeah. And that's kind of where, again, I don't know necessarily underrated, maybe underappreciated. You mentioned Lance Storm, and he's not on my list, but he definitely, I'll be honest with you, when all the video games came out on Nintendo 64, I always played with Lance Storm. I loved his moveset.
Huh.
You know, he didn't have to cut a promo on the video game, but there was just something about his style that I always
liked about Storm was that he understood that he didn't have a lot of charisma,
mm-hmm.
so he used that to his advantage.
Yeah.
When he would go, if I could be serious for a minute.
Yeah,
you know, he made that his thing. The fact that he didn't have charisma, he owned it. that he didn't have, and he would do his promos in a very non-charismatic style. Where, and he got that over,
yeah.
You know? not having charisma got him over.
Hey, you know someone who does have charisma? That is DDP. And Mark and I, today's our cheat day, so we're off the diet today. Mark and I are taking the DDP Yoga Challenge. We are starting DDP. I've done it a couple of days, and we want you to join too. So on the right side of our website, doubledropkick.com, there's a DDP yoga banner. Also, you can go to doubledropkick.com/DDP. And when you do that, you're going to go to the website and just click on some of the testimonials. There's a guy named Arthur. It is an amazing, I think it's about a 5-minute video that tells
you. Worth watching.
And it's not like, I've tried all these other exercise programs, and they show people that have lost weight. This is a guy who can barely walk, whose life is essentially over, and you see this transformation that takes place. And Mark and I, we have plans for the future. In order for those plans to happen, we've got to get in better shape. We can't afford to go to the gym and be lifting, you know, doing 500-pound squats anymore.
Right.
And DDP yoga.
Could you ever do a 500-pound squat? I'm just curious because you said anymore. And I just want to know, if you tell me about the time you squatted 500 pounds. I mean, I'm not saying you didn't go down with 500 pounds. I just want to know about how you got it back up.
Well, you see, what had happened was, I don't know who the Midnight Rider is. But anyway, check it out. Support us. And Mark and I, we're going to spare you the before and after pictures. But we are going to give you updates of
how much
weight we're... And then my hope for this is that there's a payoff for everybody at the end of why we're doing this, and that would be great. So let's move right along. Just a few names left on this list of most underrated workers of all time. Mark, who's next on your list?
Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah.
Remember that match he had with Shawn Michaels on Raw?
Yeah.
Where he did the launch over the top rope, flat out, and then Shawn Michaels super kicked him. And I think it's one of the top moments in Raw history, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just, I don't know what happened with him. I thought he had the moveset.
Yeah.
I thought he had a little bit of charisma, not a lot. Yeah. Couldn't really cut a real good promo. Right. Maybe that was ultimately what led to it, to his problems. But man, and JR would tell you every week, this is one of the most athletic guys. Plus, yeah, he's from South Carolina, so we want to give him a shout out for being from South Carolina. But I don't know, Heath. I don't know why he wasn't bigger than he was, because I really thought he was going to be the next guy.
Yeah, I loved their him and Charlie Haas, World's Greatest Tag Team.
Yeah,
I loved their stuff in Ring of Honor. I kind of missed that era of WWF, but the stuff they did with them and the Briscoes, them and the Kings of Wrestling, the All Night Express. Those were some great, great matches. And I've heard,
didn't they have like an hour and a half long match or something that he was?
Yeah, in like Spartanburg.
Was it in Spartanburg?
It was in Spartanburg. They went like, it was an, yeah, it was like crazy. It was the longest match that happened like 30 years. Anywhere.
Right, right.
But Benjamin has that amateur background, is athletic. He can do it all. If you want to go in there and
he was always, if they had a Money in the Bank match, he was in it, because they knew that he was going to do a spot where he ran up the ropes or ran up a ladder and jumped off. I mean, just every kind of gimmick match you can think of, they always put Shelton Benjamin in it because he was going to give him a good performance.
He's almost like a more muscular, bigger Kofi Kingston.
You know, I was just thinking the same thing.
He's kind of like a combination of Kofi Kingston and Cesaro.
That's a good.
If you're going to put him in a pot and stir him up.
If they had a baby, you know.
Well, yeah, I agree. And again, I think he just came around. I think if he were coming along now, And they could send him down to NXT.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Completely different story.
I think you're right. Maybe he was just hampered by the time that he was coming in, because they were getting that John Cena train rolling.
Right
about then. And I'm guessing that. And they were looking at Orton and Batista as being the two guys that Cena could feud with for a few years. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's that Kurt Hennig thing where you just happened to be there at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a really good point. The next name on my list is a name, if you didn't follow wrestling in the 80s, you didn't catch this guy at his heyday, and that's Rick Martel. Mid-80s, you had Hogan, you had Flair, and there was three companies, NWA, AWA, WWF. That was it. And I remember the dream match. Who would win? Flair versus Martel. And Flair and Martel did wrestle a couple times.
Who had that dream, Pete?
There was a whole thing.
Who had the dream? Pro wrestling. They wanted to see Rick Martel and Ric Flair. It wasn't a dream.
It was like, who would win? You know, it was like, which champion's better? And yeah. that was the thing.
You know why they never had to do that? Because
they actually wrestled.
That was a one-word article. Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah.
Flair.
But I guess my thing with Martel was, and now, granted, the AWA roster in the mid-80s, pretty weak.
Yeah.
But I put him on here because he carried the company for a couple of years as the top guy.
It's your list. You can be wrong if you want to.
carried the thing, and then poor guy got put in a tag team with Tom Zink and
You want me to argue with you?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
You finish up what you're gonna say.
But
you say he carried.
There wasn't a lot to carry.
A company. I mean, they went out of business.
Not right then. That was years later.
Right. Rick Martel.
The model. I'm talking about the pre-model.
You're talking about Strikeforce.
We are Strikeforce.
That's about 25 years going on. We've been saying that.
We are Strikeforce. Oh, my goodness.
I disagree with you.
He had bad gimmicks.
No, he didn't have bad gimmicks.
You didn't think he was? I'm talking about.
No,
you didn't think he was a good worker.
No,
really.
No, I mean, could he go mechanically through the move set? Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Right.
You know, but a lot of guys can do that.
Yeah,
a lot of guys that are forgotten, and I just think he deserves.
You think he's on that list?
I think he's on that list of he doesn't deserve to be talked about in the underrated category. I just don't think he had an impact on the wrestling. But Paul Roma could have done the model gimmick and been just as successful. Well,
and again, I'm talking more that mid-80s AWA deal.
Okay, Paul Roma could have been the AWA champion at that time and been just as successful as Rick Martel.
I don't know. I would disagree. I think he's better than Paul Roma. I think because I think at the same time he had to wrestle. He ends up losing to Stan Hansen. And they I don't think they wanted to drop the title. I think, well, maybe I'm getting work 30 years later, but maybe it was a kayfabe injury. I don't know. But I guess maybe I shouldn't have put him on the underrated list. Maybe.
No. I wanted us to argue about it.
But I'm thinking he's somebody that you don't hear mentioned. Dude, he was a champion for almost 2 years. That's unheard of.
True.
In today's age. And
he was like one of the only AWA champions not named Bach, Winkle, or Gagne.
Right.
And we still don't talk about him, so that ought to tell you something.
This is true. A lot of people forget before he went to the AWA, he was, I forget his partner's name, which that probably says a lot.
there you go.
But he was tag team champion, and they lost to the Moondogs.
All right.
So next on your list.
No, we're not done. Keep telling me about all the great achievements of the model Rick Martel. I'm captivated by your Rick Martel story.
I have disproved my own argument. So moving right along.
Wait, no, we're not moving right along. Do you think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Really?
I know.
Come on now.
I don't. No, I legitimately don't think.
Like, even if we had not had the argument, you don't think he deserves to be a Hall of Famer?
No.
But he was like a WWF Tag Team Champion.
But everybody that's a champion doesn't get to be in the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
Right.
I'd agree with you. I wanted to know, like, why
David Arquette was the world champion.
Does he get to be in the Hall of Fame?
Heck no.
Come on now. What was wrong with giving David Arquette the title?
Listen, let's not get into this, right? Hey, talk about underrated work.
Yeah.
He is not an underrated worker or an actor,
right.
David Arquette.
But I'll say this about David Arquette. I think that was ridiculous, and I'm joking about him deserving to be a champion. He took every bit of money that he made from that and gave it to Brian Pillman and Owen Hart's widow.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And he didn't ask for that. But
he didn't want
that. He played it up as
a wrestling fan. He knew that it was a bad idea, but he did it because what you going to do?
If that had been you or I, and they picked us up, it's like, hey, we want to make you.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm going to protect the business.
I'm afraid that the belt will lose some credibility if you. And I wouldn't give all the money away. I'd kept it. I ain't going to lie to you.
But, you know, I don't think that being a champion, I don't think that guarantees you a place in the Hall of Fame. I don't think Rick Martel, he didn't make anybody. He didn't.
No.
There's nobody you can think, which I don't want to get ahead of myself and the rest of my list. But maybe it should have been not underrated, but overlooked. Overlooked guys in the history of the business. But I hear everything you're saying. And like I said, when I first got into wrestling, the way that the magazines made it sound like was that if Rick Martel and Ric Flair wrestled or Rick Martel and Hulk Hogan wrestled, that you wouldn't know. I know now who would win. I know now who's better, but they
sold it to you.
They sold it to me.
They worked you. Are you saying that those wrestling magazines might have been on the payroll?
I'm telling you, if you saw a article about Jerry Lawler, he wrote it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance. How about, you know, let's talk about a guy like Lawler for a minute,
all right,
who was a huge star in one particular part of the country.
Yeah.
But outside of color commentating, never did anything outside of Memphis.
Right.
And he's in the Hall of Fame. Why? I mean, is Jerry Lawler, I mean, he really didn't do a whole lot outside of Memphis. And he was in AWA and he did a few things like that, but he never did anything in WWE. He was a one small territory, but yet he's revered as this legendary performer. And I'm not knocking Lawler. I like Jerry Lawler, and I think he's one of the greatest interviews promo guys ever. And he could work in the ring. And that, I get the program with Kaufman.
That's brilliant.
You know, which
we could
great.
Do a show. Yeah, on
we could
that.
Do a show just on that.
Can I say something about Lawler real quick? He and JR went in the. They went in the Hall of Fame the same year.
Yeah.
And I just remember how disappointed I was with Lawler's speech because it was all sexual jokes.
Yeah.
It was all, he didn't talk about his, it was like his wrestling career never happened.
Right.
It was like even during this highlight of his whole career, he was playing his announcing character.
Right.
Kind of disappointed me. And he was smart. Because he was the king of Memphis, and he never left Memphis.
Yeah.
And what he did what Hulk Hogan would do 10 years later. He brought in different people to come in.
To feed him.
Yeah, and he would build it up. And, I mean, you talk about a riot, the program he did with Austin Idol and Tommy Rich where they cut his hair.
Yeah.
They were going to burn down the – was that the Mid-South?
The Mid-South Coliseum?
They're going to burn that place down.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't sports entertainment.
Yeah, that was real to them.
It was real to them.
Yeah, they believed it. They loved Jerry Lawler. I just always, when you talk about the Hall of Fame, I'm just always curious, not you, I mean specifically, mm-hmm. but just the Hall of Fame. Like, what are the criteria? Because we know with the Baseball Hall of Fame or the Football Hall of Fame, there's some criteria.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a guy needed to have this many hits. And I know it's not, I don't think it's written out anywhere,
right.
And it might be, but it's just known.
Yeah.
A guy needed to have some 40 hit, you know, 40 home runs or whatever in a few seasons like that. But there's no real criteria for the WWE Hall of Fame.
The WWE Hall of Fame is a lot like, okay, so you've got Pro Football Hall of Fame, you have the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame, and then, the Pro Hockey Hall of Fame, and then you have just the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Right.
Basketball Hall of Fame, they have pro players, college players, pro coach. Huh. They have international people. They have contributors, referees. And that's what I think the WWE – it's not just That's why Vern Gagne can be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Right. He never had anything to do. Probably hate.
And tried to sabotage them several times.
Right, right. But it's kind of like the WWE has accepted the fact that we are the...
We're the gatekeepers of the history of the business.
Not so much what's going on now, but pretty much what happened before the year 2000.
Yeah.
You know, we're the gatekeepers.
So it's you think it's just an acknowledgement of everybody from different places, and I agree with it. I think that's what it is.
But
and I couldn't have said that better myself.
Oh well, thank you. But
because if I could, I would have tried.
but going back to I would have Lawler on my overrated list.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree. So when we do that show, just like we talked about Henning, DiBiase, and Rude. we'll talk about Lawler. All right, so. Do you want me to count? I got two guys that I'm going to throw in, and then we'll go to yours.
I ain't worried about it.
So here's the two, and I put these two guys together because I don't know that they've ever been on an underrated.
I get one of them. I cannot wait to hear the other.
So one of them is Hulk Hogan.
All right, I get that.
And I say he's underrated if you heard our show on matches you haven't seen. His title run in WWF, he could wrestle a multiple style. He could wrestle, period. Once he's in the WWF, he becomes a character. It becomes a formula. It's the boot, the leg drop.
Punches, all that.
So I think that stunted his growth as a performer. Because they put him into this box, and they probably do that to a lot of guys today. So I'm just saying, when people talk about workers in wrestling, they don't talk about Hulk Hogan, and I think that's unfair. I think, we could debate Hulk Hogan stuff. Now, the other one I have, and I put them together because they definitely would be on anyone's Mount Rushmore of wrestling, and that's Ric Flair. And I know Mark's thinking, how can Ric Flair be on? How can the person that we agree and every show
we have the greatest of all time,
how can he be underrated? Because this is just me personally. As great as we all say he is, and as great as everyone says he is, I don't know if we fully get it. Because I think sometimes we're talking about worker. So sometimes, he's the greatest. Maybe they're talking about his promos, or he's the greatest because he won so many titles, or he's the greatest because he was in, you know, some great factions. But if you get down to the actual in-ring work, and a lot of people say he's great for that, but my point is, let's look at the Hall of Fame. How many guys, eventually Sting should be in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Right.
He's not there without Ric Flair.
Right. I agree.
Ricky Steamboat, who inducted him into the Hall of Fame?
Right.
It was Ric Flair.
Yep.
If Ricky Steamboat had beat Harley Race for the title, I think Ricky Steamboat has a nice little career. But working night in and night out with Ric Flair, and when he beat Flair for the belt, it meant something. And so that's my only point is Lex Luger and Barry. So go ahead. Yeah.
No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I disagree that he's underrated.
Right.
But the knock that I always hear about Flair, which is where I thought you were going to go with this, but you didn't, was that he always had the same match.
Right.
He always did the spot where he climbed up on the rope and they did the bot. He always dropped the knee. Well, first of all, if you don't understand signature spots in a match, then you don't know anything about wrestling.
Yeah.
Everybody's got signature spots. Everybody's got those moments that they do in the match that they do in every match. It doesn't mean he worked the same match with everybody. And what I thought you were going to say with the Hall of Fame is if you run down the roster of guys who are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Ric Flair could have a good match with all of them.
Right.
But not all of them could have good matches with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that to me, and again,
And he didn't have the same match all the time. Watch his match with Brody that we talked about. Yeah. Go back and watch his matches with Terry Funk.
His match with Vader.
Watch his match. Yeah, watch his match with Vader.
Yeah.
Where Harley Race said to him in the match, if you don't start fighting back, he's going to beat the hell out of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And Ric Flair beats, he ends up beating Vader, and his, his face is all busted.
Most
up.
Of them, yeah. He swole Vader up a little bit.
But it was, that's my deal is that, and everything that I think that I've said has been said about him before, but I don't, until he is gone from the business, I don't. It may be 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. We look back and see kind of this progression of the influence that he had on. Yeah. And the people that he made that then made other people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the lineage is he didn't just make a guy and that guy stayed there. He made a guy and then that guy was able to make.
HBK retired him, and then Undertaker retired HBK.
Yeah,
and there'll be that lineage when the guy finally retires Undertaker.
Yeah,
that you'll see that that little lineage there.
Yeah, yeah, that's not going to be me, by the way.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get the call.
Yeah,
up.
Even though my Undertaker
which congratulations by the way to the Moody family. I think that's really cool that they're putting him in the Hall of Fame. I wish they'd done it when he was alive.
So that brings us to Mark's number one. And these are in no particular order. Mark, who's the last one you want to share?
Well, I had this guy on my list because I think he was a phenomenal hand in the ring. He reminded me of Kevin Sullivan.
Uh-huh.
And I had heard about him before he made his debut. There was a lot of buzz about this guy. If you followed the industry kind of at the time, the behind the scenes, who was going to be the next big star, this guy was on a lot of those lists.
Right.
But he doesn't necessarily look the part.
Right.
Even though he reminds me of Kevin Sullivan. I thought if they had given him that kind of gimmick, he could have really gotten over because he's about his size. Got a great mind. You talk about guys who are good at training people. He's training a lot of people right now, and that's Nick Densmore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you probably don't know who Nick – you might know who Nick Densmore is, but you're sitting at home going,
Who
is Nick Densmore? Well, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
They brought him in and gave him quite possibly the worst gimmick since Doink the Clown when they called him Eugene and made him Eric Bischoff's developmentally challenged nephew.
Yeah, yeah.
Give him the worst possible gimmick since Doink the Clown, and he got it over.
Yeah.
Eugene was hot.
Yeah.
And he's still running the Eugene gimmick around places.
Yeah.
And he worked Eugene as a babyface. He worked Eugene as a heel. And it was over. It just didn't have legs.
Right.
And that's the kind of character that you can't repackage. You can take Husky Harris off TV.
Yeah.
Keep him off TV for a year or two. Bring him back with a beard and long hair and call him Bray Wyatt.
Right.
And people believe it.
Yeah.
Because it's been a long time and Husky Harris nobody really paid a lot of attention to that. And I can't stand when people chant Husky Harris at him.
Yeah.
Because, everybody had to start somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
I see all these guys that did jobs when they were younger and then they got repackaged and they became stars. Edge did it. Triple H did it.
Nobody chants Terry Bolder.
No,
Hulk Hogan's in
nobody. Nobody chants Texas Red at the Undertaker.
Right, I dare you to.
Yeah, I dare you to go chant Texas Red. Nobody chants what's his name at Terror Rising. Even though I did see a Triple A, I did see a Terror Rising sign on Raw about a month ago. I thought that was cool, but it was just one of those gimmicks that he couldn't come back from.
Yeah,
but actually, I got a thing I need to send you.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I heard him do it, and I've done it.
Yeah.
I've said this exact same thing to people where he was talking to some new recruits, and he laid out how a professional wrestling angle was supposed to play out like the first Star Wars trilogy.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I need to send that to you because I know Heath and I, if you don't know, are also, aside from wrestling, we're pretty much full circle geeks.
Yes.
We both like comic books.
Star Wars.
We both like Star Wars. We both like all that kind of stuff. So he lays it out. You have, Star Wars, which introduces the character.
Yeah.
And then you have Empire Strikes Back where
the heel goes over.
And you put like the worst the baby face in the worst possible peril that you can put them in, cutting off their arm. And then the third act, the good guys win and the main bad guy turns good out of all that.
Yeah.
He lays out like that's perfect, how, you know, how a wrestling angle should work. I'll find that and send it to you.
You need to send that to Stanford, Connecticut.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Somebody needs to tell them that.
Back to basics.
Get back to basics. It doesn't have to be so dang complicated. Wrestling ain't Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Like, I understand the idea that people have shades of gray.
Right. Because
we all do. We all have the capacity to do really good things and really bad things.
Right.
And I get that you can have a baby face who maybe does some of the wrong things sometimes. Yeah. And you can have a heel that just because what they're doing is wrong doesn't mean that they're that the idea behind it's not right.
Right.
You can have that, but you still, at the end of the day, have to have a protagonist and an antagonist.
Yeah.
Or you get what we have now, where people don't know who to cheer for.
Yeah.
So all they do is boo what you're showing them.
Yeah. And that, you know,
I hope that they realize that they have a failed experiment on their hands with this trying to muddy the waters of everybody's a shade of gray.
Yeah.
They need to be black and white in wrestling.
And you have to always watch. To really get the full effect of wrestling, you have to view it through the eyes of a child. My son has been going to some local shows with me. We watch a little bit on TV. And you know what? The first thing he always asks me, when a guy walks through the curtain, do we cheer for that guy?
Right.
He's so new. He doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And it's changed so much. There's so much shades of gray.
I don't know who to cheer for. I get that you can pull for whoever you want to pull for. I get that, but you got to be able to back somebody. I need for you to help direct me to who, not just say cheer for whoever you want to cheer for.
Yeah.
I need to know what this guy's motivation is.
Right.
So I don't mind making the choice for myself who to cheer for, but you're not giving me any motivation. You have Batista come out and literally kneel down in front of Stephanie McMahon in Triple H.
Yeah.
And then I'm supposed to pull for him.
Right. Makes no sense. Well,
and I'm supposed to boo them unless Stephanie McMahon's working with the kids. Then I'm supposed to cheer for her.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that on one of our other shows, and it's just this mess.
Yeah, and see, we don't want you to have that problem. We want you to know what your motivation is, and your motivation is the wrestling you grew up with. So let me tell you some places. Go to doubledropkick.com, listen to this episode, leave us a comment. You'll see some places where we've mentioned different legends we've talked about in the show, and it says click to tweet. Click to tweet. Send them a message. Tell them, hey, I appreciate what you've done in wrestling, and hey, I appreciate the fact that the Double Dropkick Show is talking about it. Send them a message and say, don't just say thank you to us. Say thank you to these men who put their bodies on the line night after night.
Except for Rick Martel.
Except I don't think he's on Twitter, but go to our website, top of the page, support the show. So many ways to support us. Right hand side, like us on Facebook. Don't just sit there. If you want to tell Mark how wrong he is about Rick Martel, and you want to tell him Rick Martel is the greatest French Canadian wrestler in the history of the world, you call into 1-864-952-1893. And you tell him, you cut a promo on Mark.
And hey, after all two of you call, all the rest of you guys make sure that you let Heath know. So after the two guys that think that, well, actually one, because one of them sitting here in front of him.
Yeah.
So after the other guy who
thinks
that Rick
Martel.
Don't
speak in French because we don't have a translator. Leave us a comment. Go on Facebook. Hey, we want to build a community of people who love old school wrestling, and we just want to thank you all for listening.
It just got cloudy in here.
And before Mark tries to kill me, this has been the Double Dropkick Show. I am Heath Mulliken.
And I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's all the time we got for this week. Join us next week. We'll see who won this fine match, fans.